FM CHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast. CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston and some of the best co-hosts and fascinating topics of consciousness available. Shift Happens with channeler David Watson, Tracy McBurney's incredible energy consciousness, Mikael Mir's financial consciousness, and nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell with quantum physics and consciousness. It's an incredible mix of the best teachers on consciousness on every show. Call Intuitive Soul and Friends now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Good afternoon. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. This is Lori Houston. And although we normally have Mikael Mayer here today, today instead we have Jonathan Varkal. Varkal? Awesome. He is friends with Mikael. We're going to still discuss business and consciousness and life and consciousness and how it all sort of works out. But welcome.
Thank you. You're welcome. Good to be here. Really good.
Mm-hmm. And he has a great accent, so you know everybody will enjoy listening to his voice. if we can get him to talk,
I've already been labeled as the man of few words.
So. Yes, I know. So, but we know that it's going to happen.
Awesome.
You are going to talk. Yeah. We may even discuss worthiness, which is something that was brought up that might be an interesting topic just because of, I think it is a key topic, but let's start about, you know, where you sort of got into this and why, and because it's an interesting story about, you know, your own journey and how you've kind of seen it as more people related than necessarily work and technology and talk.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think for me, firstly, most of what I do now today is interesting to bring in the conscious word, but it's really been a conscious decision to engage the world in a more meaningful way.
Nice.
And so I remember quite a few years ago, I used to have a vision board that I used to put up. And my vision board that I had was on the background of my computer. And every day I'd boot up the computer and that's what I'd see. And what was quite amazing about that was that all the little lovely things that I'd stuck on that vision board, photographed and then put on the computer, seemed to actually come true. It's quite amazing that they actually do kind of work. If you stare at something long enough, it seems to somehow manifest. And there was one day that I decided I was going to just tweak it just a little. And I remember I just added I would live my purpose into the vision board. And what really transpired then, funnily enough, was that in essence, for the pretty soon after that and for quite a while after that, my whole world started to fall apart. Interestingly enough, and I never fully attributed it to that until much later, realizing, wow, you know, be careful what you wish for. You actually just might get it. And I think there was this latent, deep-rooted need to really connect with myself. You know, I started out by thinking that it was actually about connecting with other people and becoming more of something, more connected. More of something else. I'm not quite sure. There was a whole bunch of things I could spin it. More money, more success, more purpose, more this, more that. But at the end of the day, what it really boiled down to, it was a reflection of a disconnect internally that I wasn't really connected to my own purpose and to myself, in essence, to who I really was. I had no idea. I didn't know this at the time that was transpiring because I thought that I kind of knew who I was and I had all these wonderful ideas about why I am like I am, what I'd done to get where I am, and what I need to do in order to get where I want to go. So I was pretty clear about that, and it took a while for me to realize that just being clear about something doesn't mean that you have clarity.
Very good.
And so it just means that you're pretty attached to something in a very rigid kind of way that's making it seem clear because there's nothing else in your line of sight or vision.
Right. That's when we get into controlling our lives and trying to manipulate it.
It's exactly what happens. And so you start to bump up and chafe against just about everything you come into contact with, including just being caught in a traffic jam.
Right.
Because nothing is as it should be. It needs to be the way it needs to fit to this particular idea that I have of it. And I didn't realize that I had that in spades going on everywhere. and so at some point I decided that I needed to take a deeper dive. And I didn't quite know exactly how to do it. And I've ended up kind of in this place where the work I do is nothing more than a reflection of a desire to explore a deeper connection to myself, the world, and help other people in a meaningful way to allow them to move into their greatness. And I didn't realize at the time that that's what it was going to be, and I didn't know how to start. And all I knew was that I've got about 20 years of business background experience. And so, and use the word modality, there's a modality that I can kind of utilize because I understand the language of it. I understand the perspectives that people have who play in it. And I understand the challenges that people experience, and I've been intimate with those. So I can have conversations with people where I get it, but I can also help them see and touch and connect with an aspect of the issue that they're facing that's in essence beyond the particular paradigm they find themselves in, the business paradigm. And so it's a little bit of spirituality meets practicality, meets joyful living and beingness in helping other people find their truth in that moment. Nice. A lot of what I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice. And so you work with corporate people. Do you work with many holistic practitioners or like people that have more small businesses? Or?
Yep, I do. I've worked, interestingly enough, with an array of clients from nonprofit organizations.
Yes.
To co-ops, to conscious co-ops, looking to really meaningfully impact the world in wonderful ways. And I work with individuals as well and large corporations. What's really interesting is I don't have a particular agenda with respect to this is how I need the world to look. And as a result, I need to go out and provide information that will change people to orient in a particular way. I think the world is quite magical the way it is. And I think what I'd like to do is simply help people discover that in whatever it is they do. Because once they discover the magic in their life, in whatever box they're playing in, and it doesn't matter if it's a large unconscious corporate or if it's an individual who's engaging in building their business, or if it's someone who's actually, and in fact, I've actually worked with people who engage me with nothing to do with business, where it's some of the challenges that they're finding in their life, and they can seem to make sense of it, and they really have an idea as to where they think they need to be, but the situation's not conspiring to really help them understand how to navigate that. And so they just need someone to help them make sense of what's going on. And so I spend my time with people doing that, which is interesting. That just kind of unfolded as a result of just doing the work that I do. And it's not a type of work that is limiting in any way, although I think for me it's more about sensing. And so what would be appropriate, there are times, and I've had this chat with Michael before, is sensing what would be the appropriate client. Because sometimes there are clients that may not be appropriate to work with. In fact, if at some level I can sense that that's going to be harmful in some way to the work I do, and I'm going to be caught up in something, energetically speaking, that will distract me from providing the service that I do. So, for example, I could be engaging with someone who is so distracted and caught up in their particular environment, and I'm finding it particularly juicy. So the juiciness is dangerous. In yes. fact, the more I know about their topic that they're engaging in, the less, the more challenging it is for me to actually help.
Right.
Because then I start to figure it out with them.
Right.
And my role is not to figure out anything with them. It's to show them a deeper aspect to the situation at large. And awesome. So I shouldn't be caught up in it. And so if the situation provides a nice big hook for me to kind of bite down on and get caught up in it, I'm not going to do any of us any favors. So if I find that the waters are too choppy for me to really help in that regard, then I need to back away. So discerning that has also been a practice, and that will continue to evolve.
Nice. Now that's brilliant. Just because it brings in a lot of concepts that I've been working with and understanding. And very nice. I like that, just because I think we get caught up in... Well, we get caught up in people's stories. We get caught up in our own story.
Nelly. Oh, yeah.
You know, so to admit that you can get caught up in someone's story, that's really authentic.
It's engaging. It's dramatic. It's so juicy. It's so tempting. It's so believable. It's incredible. I mean, our stories are amazing.
I mean,
part of the interesting challenge is, if they weren't that believable, everyone would be pretty clear and zenned out and all connected, because there wouldn't be any drama to distract us from what's really here. And so, it's very believable and highly dramatic.
Yes. Yeah. No. I think that's really good. Just because I admire that you talk about it, because I think a lot of people... I mean, I'm a really good listener, so a lot of people tell me a lot of different things. And it's interesting, because you can get really caught up, because you can have the empath where you're, you know, either engrossed in their story and totally connected to their energy and can't detach yourself, which is what you're talking about, or you can, you know, sort of be in that distant place and detach and then not feel almost... Well, it's like dividing up your friends from your business, right? You know, you want to be in that connected place, yet you still don't want to be attached to their story. So it's an interesting dynamic that we get ourselves in.
Totally. You know, what I didn't realize is, first of all, it's such a multidimensional engagement, that dimensional world that we're engaging in. And so there are so many aspects to engaging with someone in an activity to figure something out. And what I discovered, that when someone says something about what's going on, most of the time, pretty much actually almost all the time, what they're saying about it is a way for them, in their own way, to express a starting point to explore something. So my customers aren't responding. My marketing plan isn't working. My team that works for me are being assholes. The person that I just promoted isn't performing well enough. Whatever that starting point is, it's a nice, good starting point. But at the same time, there's something else.
We're going to talk about that when we come back from break. Okay.
Great.
Awesome.
Okay.
Wanted to segue in there without interrupting you too much. We're going to go to break. You are listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. I have Jonathan Varkol here today, who can be found on the internet at jonathanvarkol.com. Jonathan spelt the way normally, and Varkol at varkul.com.
V-A-R, yeah.
V-A-R-K-U-L. All right. And if you want to find out more information about him and the work that he does, please visit his website. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
CBS Radio, The Sky, and NewSkyRadio.com are presented only for entertainment purposes and are not responsible for choices and decisions made as a result of such advice or other information offered.
Yeah. exchange, no time to exchange you and all the little lands of my ship, red and black and timber waving. They all do it the same. They all do it the same.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. Today we are talking with Jonathan Varkal. And well, we're talking about business and consciousness. And it's really not so much about business as it is about life and how we can bring spirituality and everything into our life as well as into our business. But it's kind of more about life that we're talking about than business.
Absolutely. I think business is just one way to view a slice of perspective around life itself.
Right.
But as it, at its essence, it's all life. And to not recognize that is quite painful, because then I guess we're just disconnected from who we are, living beings. And it's almost like we're holding our breath underwater in order to play a game. And then we somehow figure, well, then I'll just kind of, when I'm finished holding my breath and I can't hold it anymore, then I'll go on vacation. I'll surface for some breath and enjoy life. And then I'll go back down and hold my breath again, but not realizing that the whole thing is an opportunity to be bigger, more expansive in whatever it is that we're doing, better at our business because we're more connected to life.
Nice.
That's really the essence.
Right. Now, right before break, we were discussing something semi-important.
Well, I don't know if it was important as much as it was just we're just in the middle of discussing something. If I remember, what we were talking about was the multidimensional aspect to engaging with people in any, whether it's a business setting or in terms of the work that I do with clients. And what I found is that most of the time when I sit down with someone and I will be engaging with them, they will start to express what they believe is their biggest issue. And when someone expresses what's an issue, it's really just an opening move in a game to figure out what the real issue is. Right. It's not so much that that's their issue. In fact, most of the times we seem to believe it, but the reality is what I've discovered is that while someone's talking about their issue, there's also the real issue that's giving rise to their understanding of what it is and their expression of it. But their understanding of it and their expression of it aren't the real issue. And for what I do is I spend my attention focusing on helping the real issue emerge by helping coax out the words and their understanding that's kind of a little bit at the moment in the forefront of them being able to connect with their real issue. So what I'll do is have conversations, and to what you were saying, which is very interesting, is you were talking about trying to engage with people in a way where you're not so caught up in the drama of their story, being somehow distanced. So, for example, someone could be talking about something, and what I can get from what they're saying is they're in pain.
Right.
That's not debatable. I mean, whatever they're telling me about why they're in pain, that's very debatable. And whatever their understanding is about it, the reasons for it, where it's going, how long it's going to last, what's going on, that we can explore. But there's no reason for me to be in opposition to that with whatever I think is the reason for their pain. Because at that point, we're never going to get anywhere. What we're looking to is have them connect in a clear way with their pain. Because right now, they don't know it. They believe their issue is a customer. They believe their issue is a subordinate. They believe their issue is the person who they're reporting into. They believe their issue is the deadlines that they have to meet. They believe their issue is the company that they work for. They believe, whatever they believe it, but they don't know that their issue is actually something closer to the pain that they're feeling. Whatever that is. I don't belong. I'm scared. Well, those are real issues. And we could deal with those. But if we're starting to try and fix I'm scared with trying to figure out why Bob isn't sending you emails on time because you're so, you know, disconnected around it, will be problematic. And lots of organizations, I guess, have been relatively successful being clever.
Right.
In a cerebral kind of way, because we can move the needle from A to B, and we can make a certain amount of money, and we can be productive in a particular kind of way as a result of the cleverness that we've utilized. And so in many ways, there's a certain amount of putting our faith in cleverness and believing that that's intelligent or intelligence, where in actual fact, it's nothing more than a skill set.
Right.
You could have lots of skill sets. One of them is being clever.
Right.
But it doesn't do more than that. And what happens is at some point, organizations start to bump up against the ceiling of the limit that their cleverness can take them. In which case they start to feel, that's when they start to have all kinds of issues, personnel issues, productivity issues, product issues, all kinds of things, because there's only so far that your cleverness can take you, because the cleverness is based on whatever paradigms you're bringing to the table. And if, let's say, there are actions that are being called for, specifically with regard to a company, if it's maybe with regards to competitive things I should be aware of, or if it's with regards to the people I'm working with regarding the fact that I'm not hearing what they're saying, doesn't matter. But if I seem to think that the issue is something and I have to solve it with my cleverness, I'm going to constantly invest in clever people coming in and telling me what I need to do based on the things I'm giving expression to. So we're just going to build a lot of costs and time and wasted energy into an equation that at its core is fairly simple. I'm scared.
Right.
So, okay, so let's deal with that. It doesn't take a lot of effort. And once we explore that, what happens is there's a receptivity to seeing and feeling more in terms of what's really here. So people's line of vision moves from being so narrow and focused around a problem they believe to be the case to something that's more broad. And so you could refer that as a raising of their consciousness, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because it's your level of consciousness is just your awareness of what's here, really here. And as you raise your level of consciousness, you start to see more of what's here and less of what you think is here. and then beingness is what emerges more in that. So in many ways, that's all I'm really doing. And what I found seems to really work. The other stuff's hit and miss. So, yeah, I could maybe help on a particular aspect of what someone thinks is their problem, but some days I won't, and I'd rather help with what's the real issue.
The underlying belief that is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unworthy. I feel disconnected.
Whatever it is that's
right.
going on. And most of the time we don't know, and I don't know. And so the challenging aspect to this is engaging without being clear about what it is that's the real issue. In most types of work environments, there's either a process that people follow that'll get them to an answer. So if, let's say, you're a practitioner of some sort where there's a particular way in which you orient, I test the right arm, then I test the left arm, or I ask this question, then I ask that question. And what pops out at the end of that process is what I need to provide them with. And that's the value that I do in terms of service. This work is more scary because there isn't anything to hold on to. There isn't a clear process other than to be present.
Right.
because what's going to happen is, depending on the person, the moment itself will contain what's needed to be explored. And by holding on to a particular process, I may inadvertently steer away from what's really here. And so in work that's about raising consciousness and awareness, it's about being present, which can be very scary because we don't have anything to hold on to if I'm going to be present. I don't have anything to really allow me to know that I'm going to do okay, that they're not going to hate me at the end of this, that I'm not going to be a failure, that I'm going to get it, you know, that all that fear around, am I going to get it right or not? And you can't, you don't know. So there's something deeper that I have to connect with in order to feel grounded and safe and held, so that I can have that person feel grounded and safe and held, so that they can feel comfortable to let go and explore. And so that's a lot of where I have to do the work in order to stay clear and present for others.
That's great. That's great, because that's a service that not a lot of people offer. And as we were saying before last break, you know, you can get so caught up in the story that you don't see that piece. You don't see, or you get caught up in trying to do the quick fix. You get caught up in the Band-Aid. You get caught up in the symptoms, which exactly. is we're such a symptomatic society and victim society. And yeah,
there's nothing nourishing about in a haphazard way jumping from symptom to symptom. Mm-hmm. And feeling so caught up and whisked around and frenzied up and helpless. There's nothing nourishing in that. And unfortunately, in many cases, we're more often than not led to believe that we are able to figure it out. And I think that's probably our first mistake, is that you can't really figure it out.
Because we're trying to do it intellectually.
Right, and our brains can't compute. I mean, my brain knows how to tie my shoelaces. And my brain knows that if you give me a quadratic equation and you give it to me, I can solve it. I'm not an idiot. But my brain doesn't know how to make me happy. My brain can't figure out where my joy is going to come from. My brain can't figure out how to connect with the people out there. It's not designed for that. It's designed to be a servant to something bigger. And unfortunately, we're using a machine that's or some kind of device like our brain to lead us, when in actual fact it's really best suited to act more as a servant in doing our bidding. The brain can learn techniques and then implement the techniques. But the brain's not going to tell me anything meaningful about my life. I need to experience that for myself in the moment. And then from that, receive an insight.
Nice. With that, we're going to go to our second break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. I'm speaking with Jonathan Varkul, V-A-R-K-U-L. So you can go to his website, jonathanvarkul.com. And get more information on him and the work that he does. All right, so we are on, you're listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Feng Shui for the soul. CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries. NewSkyRadio.com.
The color them wonderful, stop me and steal my breath. And emeralds from mountains and thrust towards the sky, never revealing their depth. And tell me that we belong together, dress it out with the trappings of love. I'll be your crying soldier.
and rain falls. Angry on the tin roof as we lie awake in my bed. And you're my survival, you're my living proof. My love is alive and not dead.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. Mikael Mayer will be with us. He's usually with us on the third Friday of the month. So next month he will be with us again. Today we are honored to have Jonathan Varkal with us. He can be connected on the internet. You can check him out. His last name is spelled V-A-R-K-U-L, so jonathanvarkal.com. And you can find out more information. Now, we've been talking about what's been wonderful conversation about what we, you know, how you do your business and how you connect with people and how it's, you know, we spend all this time intellectualizing. At least this is how we spent the last bit of it. You know, we spend all this time intellectualizing, using our brain, when really it's about our heart, it's about our soul, it's about relationships. Almost everybody that connects with us that has a problem is somehow relationship related. We did say we were going to talk about worthiness.
That's so funny because I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting topic.
Well, it is, because I think this is where a lot of people, that's a lot of their story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have issues around worthiness.
Totally. Totally, totally. It's incredible. And I can say that I'm not one of those.
I mean, I think it's an underlying unconscious belief in fact, a lot of people.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with Mikael yesterday, funnily enough, and that's maybe why this kind of ended up being the topic, where I was sharing some processing I was doing around worthiness. And it was really quite interesting, because I always thought that, first of all, what was really interesting was I had decided that I was going to do some processing around worthiness. And for the last few days, I couldn't remember the word worthiness.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. Right?
There's something there, no doubt. And because I couldn't remember it, it really started to shift my energy towards remembering it, and so it got my attention. Whereas, if I was remembering it, it wouldn't really have my attention. Now, okay, it's got my attention. So now that's got my attention. What I want to do about it, what is it, what's the scoop with respect to worthiness? And what I started to notice, quite interestingly enough, was that the worthiness that I think of is often worthiness around being something more than what I am, or measuring up in some way, In other words, filling a paradigm around worthy. In other words, I've got this idea of what worthiness is, and so now I'm going to somehow look at my life and judge each aspect of it and decide whether I'm now worthy. That's kind of one way of looking at it. And what I realized was that I can't really experience real worthiness through that approach. In other words, I'm not going to experience worthiness by looking at what I deem to be my shortcomings and then set about fixing them. And so at some point in time, I'm going to then be worthy. So then it begged the question, well, then what should I do? And I realized, well, what I also can't do is tell myself some BS about the fact that I am fully worthy because I don't believe it. Right. So why bother telling myself I'm worthy and then try and get myself to believe it, which is a lot of stuff. Just got to believe you're worthy. It's like, no, I don't. I can't. I'm not. I don't. I just don't. So what can I do? And I think what I realized is, first of all, is that being caught up in ideas of who I am, what I'm supposed to be doing, how I'm supposed to be doing it, judging it, leads to an experience of not worthy. And the desire to find worthiness in a judgment that tells me I've measured up is very hollow and not substantive. It's not substantial. So I can't really go about there. In fact, if I can do anything, it's watch my tendency to want to view my worthiness or unworthiness in some particular way. I can do that. I can also watch how I'm frenzying up right now about being on time for something or not being good enough at something, and that's coming from this idea that I'm building on of I'm not worthy enough, and if I don't get there on time, they're going to do something to me. Something will happen that will leave me less than worthy. And I realize that all I can really do then is watch my tendency to be a certain way around an absence of worthiness. And what starts to happen in that is, as I start to watch it and not judge it, what's weird is that inherently so, because I'm now seeing the tendency, I'm not so much caught up in it. And so then what starts to happen is it starts to release its grip, this iron-like grip that it has on me in terms of the cells in my body that feel so agitated around not being worthy. And I can breathe at the same time, miracle of miracles, as watch myself, judge myself about not being worthy, which is very tough because normally we're not breathing very deeply or very openly or very open to what's going on while we're judging ourselves. But if I can take the time to allow myself to say, okay, that's what I'm doing, I can actually really experience what not worthiness feels like. And not worthiness doesn't feel good. You'll feel it in your body. When you're feeling that anxiety of not getting where you're supposed to go on time, or not doing the project in the way that you thought it would work out, or scared that the business is not going to be successful, all very much symptoms of this underlying belief of not being worthy. That contraction you feel in your stomach, that's simply your body saying, this is what I'm not worthy feels like.
Right.
It's like, well, no. Of course that's what it's going to feel like. If I told myself I'm not worthy, that feeling is what not worthy feels like. So now I'm more in touch with what not worthy feels like. So how do you discover worthy in the not worthy, I think, is the real challenge that I face, because I can't find worthiness in actually going to look for it. I can only find it by watching the absurdity of being attached to this not worthiness. And in that, what happens is, as that starts to recede, you start to realize that the very peacefulness that I'm experiencing, that just being here, I'm here, like not here because I'm good or here because I'm bad or here because I'm a failure or here because I'm a success, but I'm just here. The minute I can start to just experience and allow myself to be here, we can then allow worthiness to emerge, because that's more of a reflection of real worthiness, is I'm good enough that I'm okay with being here.
Right.
Once you're good enough and you're okay with being here, then you can access the power of what it's like to really be here and show up in a way that reflects real worthiness. There won't be any stirring and anxiety around how I have to be and what I have to say in order to get someone to believe something so that I can then feel patted on my back and really be worthy. Or at least I'll pat myself on my back through my own mind. You don't need to do that.
Right. So that's brilliant for a couple of reasons. Because one, a lot of the times we're looking externally. Like we look outside. I'm writing a book called When the Law of Attraction Doesn't Work, because we've all know, you know, all of the things that, you know, how we're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it's, you know, looking at externally for something that we're trying to create. It's not, you know, the internal thing. It's so unworthiness to try and understand it or accept it. If you're looking outside of us for that acceptance, it's just not there, right? So taking that step back, being detached and looking at it from that perspective is brilliant, because it's allowing yourself to accept it, to accept you, to be authentically you, and to also become the observer of this piece that, you know, who knows when and how it was created, but it's there. It's in our unconscious, and now it's becoming more conscious, and so now you're working on accepting it, and that's the piece.
So this, how could there be anything more worthy than self-acceptance?
Yes.
So the fact that I can accept part of my beingness as being slightly neurotic and less than and thinking I'm less than worthy, when I can start to accept that that's what I do, as just pretty much most of us do, I would imagine. We just, some are better at disguising it than others. And it leaks in different ways. But the reality is, once we see that, we can kind of just chill out a little and just go, okay, that's just me. And that, if we can bring a bit of that chill out a little into the environments where we think we really need to be so on and so productive and so clever and so more than whatever the moment's calling for, we can really be more at ease in it. We can bring more of our real self into the moment and show up. And that's how real greatness emerges. It's very ordinary. People think that real greatness is something that's extraordinary. But in fact, it's the extraordinary that almost births out of us accepting us being ordinary and doing ordinary things, and then leave the extraordinary to kind of almost flourish on the top. I don't worry about my hair. It just grows. So don't focus on it. I just eat healthy food and do whatever I need to do to just keep my body going, and the hair will grow if you have hair.
Exactly.
But, you know, but the reality is there's certain things that we think we need to be doing than we probably need to be doing. And so it makes, and that's the pain that we're in. So one's experiencing that pain.
Yes. Brilliant. All right. We're going to go to our last break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. And today with us, he can be found on the internet at jonathanvarkul.com, VARKUL.com. You're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
A man decides after 70 years that what he goes there for is to unlock the door. For those around him criticize and sleep. On a breaking wall, I see you, my friend, and touch your face again. Miracles will happen as we dream. No one ever gonna survive unless we are a little. We're never gonna survive unless.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. And usually we have Mikael Mayer today, but instead we've been blessed with Jonathan Varkle. And this has been I've really enjoyed it because I like your different approach on how you, I like the way you connect with people. I like the way your thought process. I love the fact that you're authentically you and, you know, not trying to be somebody else and talking from that perspective. And I like that, you know, how you work with people, how you sort of try and help them with that underlying belief system. And so we were talking about worthiness. No, I think we've, I don't know, do we have more to say on that?
I don't know. I think it feels like we've kind of
talked about it. Yes.
Do you feel that there's something in worthiness that...
I think the whole bit that we kind of got about us looking outside of ourselves, about the fact that most of the time it's about relationships, you know, this aspect of worthiness is huge. I think it's much bigger than most people understand. I think when we can come from a place of self-acceptance, that's really the key. That's really that magical place that that everything can happen from. And it's, you know, being present. And we've discussed all of that. Is there any other piece that we may not have talked about that you sort of see happening a lot?
Yeah, worthiness is an interesting one because it seems to form a core belief of a lot
Definitely.
Of people, right? And so
core.
So in many cases, what's interesting, what is a core belief? Nothing more than a thought, right? It's an idea. And all our thoughts build on each other. So it's kind of like building this little structure of some sort. And that's really, our thoughts are just matrices of structures that are put together. And if our core belief is really, I'm not worthy in some way, then all our thoughts are at least connected, intimately so, with that fundamental
concept.
Thought.
Yeah.
Which means, how much can we really trust to follow the commandments or the voices in our heads around anything if fundamentally it's built on something that's not very, very sturdy?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be a good idea for people to check out when they start to think, I need to get that done today, or we have to have that done, or something's going to go wrong, or you're starting to get frustrated, to really check out whatever we're thinking, I'm going to be late, or I'm not going to be liked, or this is going to fail, or whatever those thoughts are, to really check them out in the context of they're built on something that's really around not worthiness. And the way to be alerted to that that's going on, because I think we spoke earlier about the juiciness of our thoughts and how we really believe them to such an extent because they're so believable, very difficult to kind of recognize at that moment that I'm going to be late because it's so juicy and I really am going to be late is actually, and the way I feel about I'm going to be late is actually a reflection of something about worthiness. And so the way to check that out is, if you're going to be late, then that's just information.
Yeah.
If you feel terrible about it, then that's something to check out because it means that it's no longer information. It means that it's built on something beyond that piece of information. Because there's nothing you can do about that piece of information at that point. And so when you check it out, the only way to check it out is through what your body is feeling. So you sense there's something. And this is where a lot of the work comes in, is that you move from the cerebral engagement, the thinking it out, into sensing it. You start to bring in more of your body into providing you with information to figure out where you need to go. And your body is very adept at letting you know that this isn't the right thing. It's, you feel it. It's your stomach's churning. And we seem to think that, and rightfully so, and I'm churning because I'm going to be late. But actually, it's churning because you're using some kind of basic piece of information to beat yourself up because you're not worthy. And when you start to see that, you can really start to make inroads into attending to what really needs to be attended to, which is the fundamental issues that you have going on.
Yeah. Very nicely said. I think, you know, we get caught up. It's funny because you've nicely avoided, because usually when you're late, you're late, you're worried about the fact that somebody's going to be upset with the fact that you are late. Mm-hmm. You know, you've kind of nicely avoided the whole relationship aspect.
My job's in jeopardy.
Yes.
And the person's not going to be like me. I gave my word. And you know how when you give your word, you're supposed to meet it. And you know how people who aren't on time are considered tardy. Get all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, you're going to be late. If you're going to be late, you're late. Like, yeah. Okay, that's information. And once you're late, in the moment when you are late, you will then attend to it with all your presence of being.
Yes.
Because if you arrive scattered and thinking about what's the problem, when you're there, you may discover that no one even cares. And just about everyone else was late.
Yeah.
But you won't have the ability to really be here in this moment and while being late. And be present, because you're so frenzied and caught up in an idea as to what it all means.
Nice.
And that's really the real shift, because that's when you show up in your greatness, is where you can say, I'm sorry for being late. You don't have to beat yourself. Like, you can apologize for something. There's all kinds of things you can do, but you don't have to make it into a massive production.
Right. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Jonathan. This has been, I don't know that you realize that the hour has gone so quickly, mm-hmm. but it has. I would love to have you back at any time. So maybe we'll explore some different options on that, because I like your perspective and I like your gentleness and I like the way that you bring everything into a clarity. Clarity. That's what it's all
there
about.
Is. That's
it?
What it's all about.
All right. Well, you can find out more about Jonathan if you go to his website, jonathanvarkul.com, VARKUL.com. You can find out more about him there. You've been listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. Mikhail Mayer will be back with us next month. But you're listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.